I'll explain the definition of Dirichlet characters, compute with them a little, motivate why you should be interested in Dirichlet characters, and then explain some of the theory behind how you actually compute with them. And they're really, I guess, as far as I know, there's only one program besides programs that I've written for computing at all with Dirichlet characters or even defining them. And I've implemented them in at least three different ways. But I'll show you what I think at the end of the day is by far the best representation, at least for purposes of computing with modular forms. And this will take 2 days because, again, I'll tell you about a number of things that are really interesting and just I couldn't do everything right now. So. All right, so the definition of a Dirichlet character. What I'll start with, which I can fortunately do because I have one set of notes left. So amazingly, the definition isn't on page one, just to mention motivation, but here's the definition. It's right there on page 64. Definition. Wow, so much space when I hear that. Cool, but of course then you can't see. I'm gonna try to use maybe some of the buffer. I feel really, three panes isn't enough, but let's see, you can. Okay, so I'll start. At least I can stand. Okay, definition, Dirichlet character. Okay, so all it is a, it's a map. First a set-theoretic map from Z to some ring R. Here R is a ring. Let's just say a ring commutative, you know, etc. So it's a map like this. First just a set theoretic map, not a ring homomorphism. But it has a little bit of extra properties. And actually this is a Dirichlet character over R. In the literature, I've never seen them defined except over C, but in computational applications, it's often very important to consider them over other rings, such as over finite fields or p-adic fields. But usually people talk about them just over R. So it's a set theoretic map like this that's simply induced by so to avoid any possibility of you misunderstanding what I mean by induced, it's a set theoretic map such that there is a group homomorphism from Z mod N Z star. So this capital N is the modulus. So it's a homomorphism, or it's a set theoretic map such that there's a homomorphism from Z mod N Z star to R star. This is a group homomorphism on unit groups with epsilon of, or such that epsilon of A it's just F of A if the GCD of A in capital N is 1, and it's 0 otherwise, if the GCD is not 1. Okay, so that's it. That's the definition of Dirichlet character. So, yes?
In your notes you have bracket zeta instead of R star.
Can you prove that?
Yeah, that's actually quite a better idea. The problem with this definition is this ring might have zero divisors and, let's see, what the finite subgroup of multiplicative group of field cyclic, but not the finite, finite subgroups of the of a multiplicative group of a ring might not be cyclic, I guess. Surely not. Is that completely obvious?
Yes, the product. What the image is cyclic, is that?
Yeah, I want everything to take place, otherwise I'll make statements and they won't be true. The problem here is you could take R to be, you know, F3 cross F3 cross F3. And then the unit group is a product of a whole bunch of cyclic groups. And I really want, I want to fix a cyclic subgroup of R star and consider the group of all Dirichlet characters that map to that cyclic group. But
the image of Z mod NZ has to be cyclic.
That's right. Right? Well, actually, that's not true. Why do you think it has to be cyclic?
Because everything has order N. Well, of the multiplicative order.
There's a star.
Yeah,
so it's more fun.
True.
So you retract your statement?
Until I come with the rationale, but yeah.
Okay. So, for example, Z mod NZ, instead of you can distract my dog and do a counterexample. So this is isomorphic to a product. It's the group generated by minus 1 and 5. So and each of these has order 2 in Z mod 8Z star. And you can take your R to be F3 cross F3. So this is our R. Here. And then the unit group of R, R star, would then be plus or minus 1 cross plus or minus 1. And then you can certainly have a homomorphism and isomorphism from one to the other, and the image is not cyclic. So that would really, just so I can make a bunch of true statements and develop a computational theory, I want to fix a root of unity zeta in R, and I consider only the homomorphisms that map to that the subgroup generated by that root of unity. But I completely neglected to do that when I put this up on the board. So I'll just add that for condition in.
That's odd. Did I unplug it? Yeah. This isn't turning on.
I think that they can plug in.
Let's see. I think it is actually because
this is on. So this is on. Yeah, it's charging. Maybe they're projectors. So. Yes. So I just want to fix a zeta inside of R. And once you fix a zeta inside of R, then everything's fixed.
And
let me just check this for a second. Okay, it's just an issue with the power output.
Doesn't work. But actually, maybe I don't. Oh well.
Something weird about this power strip. Works fine when I put it into the wall, but not that'd be the power strip. Okay, so
I won't use the projector today. There are plenty of examples in the notes, anyways. So.
Okay, so let me modify the definition to agree exactly with what's in my notes, because otherwise there's a whole can of worms that are completely unnecessary for anything I'm going to do. Yes? Sure.
When you pick the root of unity R in the global name, do you know that that's not 1? Or
no, it can be 1. That's perfectly okay.
Just map it to the singleton set.
Yeah. You can. Yeah. So that would be perfectly okay. So fix this ring, and fix a zeta in the ring, in the units of finite order. And then it's a Dirichlet character over R, you know, with this fixed choice of zeta. So I can somehow throw zeta into this. And even doing that can be really useful because you often want to consider the group of all Dirichlet characters over R that take values in some, you know, subgroup. Like if R were C, you might want to consider just the quadratic characters, and you could do that by choosing zeta to be minus 1. Okay, so Dirichlet characters like this. But the only modification I have to make here is to put a group generated by zeta in R. So is the definition clear now? fix a ring R, you fix a root of unity zeta in R, which could potentially be 1 in case your ring doesn't have any non-trivial roots of unity, and then you can consider all maps from Z to R that are induced by a homomorphism from Z mod NZ star to R star. Okay? And now, why is this at all interesting, important, relevant to this course, etc.? I'll give you two quick reasons why Dirichlet characters are very important in this course. One is the following. If you consider the space of modular forms mk gamma 1 of n, it is a lot, it has dimension vastly bigger than the dimension of the space of modular forms mk gamma 0 of n. And this is annoying. The dimension up here is about n times as big as the dimension down here. You get in a lot of trouble if you want to directly compute this. You can do it for a couple of values of n, but then you have to give up after, as soon as n gets three digits, you're probably out of luck to directly compute this, or to compute much about it. However, there's an action of z mod nz star on mk gamma 1 of n. And I won't go into detail yet about what that action is, but this action allows you to take that finite dimensional complex vector space and decompose it as a direct sum of subspaces corresponding to each of the characters of Z mod NZ star with values in the complex numbers, or over the complex numbers. So what you get is that mk gamma 1 of n is a direct sum over all epsilon Dirichlet character mod n. Of mk gamma 1 of n epsilon, where this means the subspace of mk gamma 1 of n, where z mod nz star acts via this homomorphism. And this is just a completely general fact, it's trivial to prove. You just, z mod nz star, this is a whole bunch of operators acting on this finite dimensional complex vector space. They commute, so you simultaneously, they're also each of finite order, so they're all diagonalizable. So you simultaneously diagonalize them, and that will give you this decomposition. But the neat thing is that this decomposition, each of the factors here as complex vector spaces, has dimension about the same as mk gamma 0 of n. And moreover, they're using modular symbols, you can directly compute each of these factors or any individual factor that you're interested in without having to look at the full space. So, also, mk gamma 0 of n is just one of these factors. It's the factor corresponding to epsilon equal to 1, the trivial character. So that's one motivation. Another almost completely separate motivation, which is something the second motivation is Eisenstein series. Again. So I told you about computing m2 gamma 0 of n, but only partly. I really only described an algorithm for computing s2 gamma 0 of n using modular symbols. But there's another subspace of Eisenstein series, and you have to compute it as well if you want to compute m2 gamma 0 of n. And there's an explicit description of this space in terms of Dirichlet characters modulo n, first. And second, if you actually write down the Q expansions of the elements of this space, they have constant terms that involve Bernoulli numbers attached to Dirichlet characters modulo n. So in two different ways, Dirichlet characters mod n come up in describing Eisenstein subspace. Okay, so those are just two motivations for Dirichlet characters in this course, but also they're very interesting outside of this course. If anybody was in Ralph's course, people who are in Ralph's course last quarter year, whenever you taught your course, surely saw Dirichlet characters in the context of L functions that are kind of like the Riemann zeta function, but correspond to abelian extensions of Q. So Dirichlet characters, I mean, just following that theme, Dirichlet characters naturally correspond up to conjugacy with a billion extensions of the rational numbers. So if you want to understand anything about a billion extensions of Q, Dirichlet characters arise in a natural way. Another special case of a Dirichlet character is the Legendre symbol, which tells you whether or not a number is a square modulo p. That's a Dirichlet character mod 4p at least. And it's just a special case of this sort of theory, but where the zeta is plus or minus 1, where the Dirichlet character has order 2. So all the stuff that Gauss did with quadratic reciprocity, et cetera, that at least you can think of that as being a theory that to some extent just gives you a quick way of computing quadratic Dirichlet characters efficiently. Okay, so that's just the motivation. And now on to how they work in practice. I wish this would work. It doesn't work. So darn. Okay, so I'll just show you examples in the notes. So in order to give you a sense that Dirichlet characters are concrete, easy to work with objects, I have given a whole bunch of examples of how you can just compute with them in Sage. And after showing you these, so that you'll think, oh, it's just easy to work with them, it's just like doing linear algebra, I'll show you what some of the underlying machinery or number theory is that's involved in implementing this. So I'm looking at the middle of page 64, the beginning of the section called Dirichlet Characters in Sage, which is section 4.2. And the first line gives an example of defining Dirichlet character modulo 11. And you see the output. You get a Dirichlet character. You get the group of all Dirichlet characters modulo 11. So I just let G be the group of all Dirichlet characters modulo 11. And the command list of G just lists all of the elements of that group. Now notice that I gave the second argument as the rational field. So these are the Dirichlet characters that take values in the rational field. And what Sage does is it implicitly makes a choice of a zeta that's the best choice possible if you don't explicitly specify it, which I haven't done here. So it chooses minus 1 as the zeta, and then it considers all homomorphisms from z mod 11 z star to plus or minus 1 inside of q star, and you end up with exactly two of them. Yes?
Best possible zeta, does that mean a maximal order?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And it's possibly an interesting question given a number field described by a polynomial. How do you find as efficiently as possible the best root of unity, but root of unity with largest order in that number field? So I think I implemented something stupid in Sage, but it might be possible to do something better. Anyways, so list of G lists the elements, and the elements are described pretty simply. Basically, you have a list of two things here, one and minus one. Just think of those as matrices. After all, what are Dirichlet characters? Well, they're basically homomorphisms, at least when you restrict them, to z mod n z star. Or at least they're defined by homomorphisms. And homomorphisms, in some way or another, usually can be given by matrices. And that's exactly how Dirichlet characters will be presented. So this is a trivial Dirichlet character. And this is the Dirichlet character that takes a choice of generator of z mod 11 z star to minus 1. So again, it's like a matrix, you're seeing where the basis goes to. The next thing says epsilon equals g dot 0. So if you have a group g in Sage, if you say g dot 0, gives the zeroth generator, if you say g dot 1, it would give the first generator, and so on. This one has only one generator, since it's a cyclic group of order 2. And I print out the generator. The command unit gens, so that's kind of like basis. This group z mod nz star, it doesn't really have any really, really good sense canonical generators. It's not cyclic in general, but it is certainly a finite abelian group, so you can break it up as a product of cyclic groups, and then you could choose, in hopefully some reasonably canonical way, generators for each of those cyclic factors. And in the case of z mod 11 z star, that already is a cyclic group, and a choice of a generator for z mod 11 z star, the smallest one, if you just try 1 or 2 and so on, is 2. So that's what's output where it says g dot unit generators. So this matrix really sends, that, or this minus 1 says that 2 is sent to minus 1. This Dirichlet character is reduced by 2 goes to minus 1. And then you can see at the bottom of page 64 examples of how you evaluate the Dirichlet character epsilon. which is this quadratic character, on various numbers. You simply take any integer and you say epsilon of that integer. It gives you back a number, which is the value of the character on epsilon. And the results are a rational number. And then on the top of page 65, what I've done is I've ran through, I just evaluated epsilon at all multiples of 11 up to 99. And you see that you get zero in each case, because 11 is not coprime to the modulus. Okay, the next example is a little more interesting. You define R to be the cyclic atomic field got by adjoining a fourth root of unity to Q. So that's what cyclic atomic field of 4 means. And then you print it out, it says it's of order 4 and degree 2. Degree means, so that's the degree as an extension of Q. And order is just the order of the root of unity. And then you consider the group of all Dirichlet characters with modulus 15 taking values in Q zeta 4. But do you see that typo? It's a missing closed parentheses. Okay. So just define the group, and then you can list all of its elements. That's in the middle of page 65. And you see there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different elements. Each one's given by a 1 by 2 matrix. So there, for Z mod 15Z star, what you do is you break it up as Z mod 3 cross Z mod 5. And then you take units there, and it's Z mod 3 star cross Z mod 5 star. Take the smallest generator of each of those factors, and these matrices, what they are giving is the image of the smallest generator for the Z mod 3 Z star factor and the smallest generator for the Z mod 5 Z star factor. So, for example, the first one, which sends those two to 1 and 1, that's the trivial character. The next one, which sends those two generators to minus 1 and 1, that's a quadratic character. And so something interesting is happening at 3, but not at 5. And the next one sends your generator mod 3 to 1, and the 1 mod 5 to a fourth root of unity, and so on down the line. And then you can take specific ones and evaluate them just as before, just by saying, if E is the Dirichlet character, you say E of a number, and it gives you back the value of the Dirichlet character at that number. There's an example at the bottom of page 65, and there there's an example of a Dirichlet character over a finite field GF5, or the finite field GF5, the finite field of order 5. So I define the group of Dirichlet characters, and then again, output a list of all the Dirichlet characters. And again, they're represented as by giving the values of generators for Z mod 15 Z star on, or in the ring. So in this case, notice that all of the matrices have elements that are in F5. So for example, one of the characters is labeled 4-2. And this means that this is the Dirichlet character. Well, if you take Z mod 15 Z star, and you write it as Z mod 3 Z star, cross Z mod 5 Z star, and then I'm going to give you generators for this group, and I'll define them in a canonical way. Take the smallest generator for Z mod 3 Z star, which is a cyclic group. So the smallest generator is what? Well, there's only one choice, namely 2. So that generates here. And what's the smallest generator for Z mod 5 Z star?
Two
again, right. Okay, so what you do now, I really want elements mod 15, so I use the Chinese remainder theorem to find an element of Z mod 15 Z star that reduces to 2 modulo 3 and reduces to 1 modulo 5. And I'll list that here, so I don't know what it is, but... 11 works? Okay. So 11 reduces to 2 modulo 3 and it reduces to 1 modulo 5, right? Okay, what can I use for the other one? 7? Okay, so the 7 certainly reduces to 1 here and it reduces to 2 there. Thank you. Okay, so now I have these two numbers, 11 and 7, and they're completely canonically defined. You can do this for any n. You break it up as a product of cyclic groups corresponding to the prime power divisors of n. For each of the prime power divisors, you take Z mod P to the RZ star, which is a cyclic group, that's an exercise, And you take the smallest generator, then you take one for all the other factors, and use the Chinese remainder theorem, and you get a generator of, one of this list of generators of Z mod and Z star. So you do this for all the primes that divide in. There's a catch, things are a little more complicated for n equals 2, but for the odd primes, what I said works fine. And this, the matrix I wrote before, the character I wrote before, which is given by 4, 2, this is the Dirichlet character mod 15 that sends 11 to 4, and sends 7 to 2, and then you extend it to the whole group by, you know, everything can be written in terms of 11 and 7, since these generate. Okay? Now, there are a lot of different ways you could describe Dirichlet characters, and the one I just by describe, I mean, how can you explicitly give an actual Dirichlet character? And I just told you a way, you simply give a list of elements that are in this group generated by Zeta. That's a way to do it. And you know exactly what I mean by the Dirichlet characters. I told you that what these listed elements give are the images of generators, which we compute using the Chinese remainder theorem and taking the smallest one in each factor, smallest generator in each factor. Okay? But there are a lot of other ways you could think to describe Dirichlet characters. And I'll avoid describing them right now to avoid confusion, but there are at least three or four other ways that get worse and worse, but that I've implemented and suffered through having implemented before. Okay, so on to the section representing Dirichlet characters, which I basically just explained to you. Let's see. So I should say something about what you do when n is even. And I should also just tell you this exercise. So first, if you think about Z mod n Z star, you might think, hey, it's cyclic, because after all, Z mod P Z star is cyclic, and you know, Z mod 25 Z star is cyclic, so maybe Z mod n Z star would be cyclic. But actually, Z mod n Z star is certainly far from cyclic, because you know, you have this sort of problem. And when these have order that isn't coprime, then this group isn't cyclic. However, amazingly, Z mod P to the n Z star is cyclic, except in one case, which is when P is even. This is cyclic unless p equals 2. Now, if p equals 2, it's almost cyclic. It's generated by something and minus 1. So z mod 2 to the nz star is minus 1 cross, I think 5 always works in all cases. But actually, I'll put a question mark because I'm not quite sure. But you can always do it with one other element. I think 5 works. So in fact, it's the product of a cyclic group of order 2, the cyclic group of order is 2 to the n minus 2. So these are both exercises that are literally in the exercises. They're elementary number 3 questions. Not necessarily particularly super easy, but they're relevant to describing how to compute with Dirichlet characters. Okay, so here's how you represent Dirichlet characters, summarized and including what happens when n equals 2. So consider z mod n z star. You want to somehow represent homomorphisms from z mod n z star to your finite cyclic group. And you do that by, you write z mod n z as a product of cyclic groups of prime power order. Sorry, you write z mod n z star as a product of cyclic groups of prime power order, except at 2, you always include 2 factors. No matter what. As long as some power of 2 divides n, you have 2 factors. Even for n equals 1. So then you would have the group generated by minus 1 and the trivial group, since 5 would be congruent to 1 mod 4. Okay? So if your number is even, you have exactly 2 factors corresponding to 2 entries in your matrix, and then for the other primes, you have exactly 1 factor for each of them. And these are the generators that you use. And for this, you use the smallest generator. Just try 2, if that doesn't work, you try 3, if that doesn't work, you try 4, and so on, until you find one that generates. That's it. Okay. I implemented this in Magna once, and I made the assumption that It would always choose the smallest generator when you use the command to ask for a generator of zmod p to the nz star or zmod. You know, zmod something that's cyclic. There's a unit group command, and I made the assumption it would always get the smallest generator. This was true for like everything up to about 50,000. Then there was this one case or a little bit higher where suddenly the algorithm did something differently, and it completely broke my assumption. So then I had to run over to the guy, knock on the door of the guy who implemented it, and ask him what was going wrong. So if you ever decide to implement and directionally characters where you use this representation, you might find that your program seems to, that you're using to compute a generator for this, seems to always figure the smallest one, but in fact doesn't after some huge range of cases where it does. So just a funny little story to worry about. It was pretty amazing.
How long does it take?
Yes, defined?
Defined.
The complexity is entirely really the complexity of factoring p minus 1. That's where the difficulty comes. And I mean, it's very easy if you have a way, if you factor p minus 1, then you just consider, so I have a whole section about this in there, but I'll just say that that's related to the complexity of factoring p minus 1. Basically, what you need to be able to do is quickly compute the order of an element to see whether or not, or at least something. So say you have some. So you have this group, and just for simplicity, and in fact, you can reduce the case to z mod pz using. Well, I'll explain it right now since you asked. So z mod p to the nz star. There's a homomorphism to z mod pz star, right? You just take an element mod p to the n and reduce it mod p. So that's a really useful homomorphism. Its kernel is isomorphic to 1 plus p z mod p to the nz, right? So things that are congruent to 1, and these are all units. So that's the kernel of this map. And this thing is pretty, you know, you understand the order completely of this kernel. It's just the power of p. I mean, another way to, yeah, so it's just the power of p. So if you're interested in finding a generator for this, really you can reduce quickly to finding a generator for this. Because all you have to do is take a generator for this and combine it with a generator for this, and you'll end up doing a generator for that. Okay. And by the way, to do the exercise to prove that this is cyclic, it's very useful to consider this exact sequence. But so really the hard part is computing an element here, or finding an element here that's really a generator. And if you try 2, and then 3, and then 4, and then 5, you will, in fact, if you have a way of deciding whether or not one of these generates, you'll, in fact, very quickly find that one of them does generate. Usually a very small number will generate z mod pz star. There's some famous basic open problems about how often 2 is a primitive root mod p, and so on. I think that Arden thought about, and because I haven't thought about them in a long time, I won't say anything about what the actual statements are, because I don't want to be misleading. It's really inside. In any case, the real question is, how can you decide whether or not 2 is a generator? How can you decide whether or not 3 is a generator? Well, let's suppose that you factor p minus 1. So you write it as a product of qi to the ei. Really all you need is the prime divisors. So, but really, if you can find the prime divisors, it's trivial to factor. So suppose you have an element A in here, and you want to figure out whether or not A is a generator. Well, using the binary powering algorithm, you can very efficiently compute A to the power of p minus 1 over any of these q sub I. Because you just write p minus 1 over q sub I in base 2, and then you do a couple of successive squarings and multiply together the ones that correspond to the ones in the exponent here, and you end up getting A very efficiently. But I've read actually in a book that Gauss didn't know about this binary powering algorithm from looking at what he actually did. I don't know if I believe it, but it can't be trivial if Gauss didn't notice it. I mean, I don't think I believe that book, because how could Gauss not know about it? So in any case, if you write this in binary, it's easy to compute A to that power. You just have to be careful to reduce mod P as you do each operation. So you can compute, if you have this factorization, then you can compute all these powers efficiently. If none of these powers are equal to 1, then your element A has to have order p minus 1, which is the order of this group. If any of these are equal to 1, then your element has a small order. So assuming that you have the prime factors of p minus 1, you can quickly decide whether or not A is a generator. And factoring p minus 1, well, has one obvious factor, namely 2. So it's just as hard as factoring p minus 1 over 2, which could easily itself be prime. So, and factoring is hard, as far as we know. Extraordinarily hard. On the other hand, the Dirichlet characters, the moduluses, the Dirichlet characters that will be interested in this course are usually pretty small. They're usually, you know, most maybe 6 digits. And then factoring is really, really easy. That said, Kevin Buzzard has occasionally sent me emails related to calculations he's done, where he ends up doing all kinds of stuff with Dirichlet characters, and the level is pretty large. So you could eventually run into issues like this, especially if you're thinking about chaotic modular forms where the levels can get really, really big in a natural way, because there you end up considering all these levels with big powers of p in them or something. So that answers your question, right? It doesn't completely, because it's conceivable maybe there's another way of telling that A is a generator without actually having a factor. But I don't know. I just simply don't know. There's some alternative. I don't think having a generator gives you a way to factor. So it could be there's a faster way, and I just don't know about it. It doesn't require factoring. By the way, this is algorithm 434 on page 67. That's basically what I just described. And then there's a whole bunch of examples that illustrate what we are doing right here. Example 435 does this mod 49. And you see there are three, what are the three of? Oh, this just illustrates the algorithm. You take z mod 49 z star and you like to find a generator. Here I haven't reduced to the prime case. But I just take 2 and you raise it to the power of the order of the group divided by 2, the order of the group divided by 3, and the order of the group divided by 7, and you notice that actually already when you raise the power of n over 2, you get 1. So that thing's definitely not a generator. So then you try 3, and 3 works. So in practice, you quickly find one that works. And it's a theorem that you always find one that works. And actually, it's a cyclic group, so you can compute the number of generators. I think it's 5 the order of the... Wait, what is the number? Sorry, somebody help me. What's the number of generators of a cyclic group of order n?
5n.
Okay. So, so the probability that you'll find a generator, if they were equally distributed, would be
n over 5n.
Nope.
I mean 5n over n.
So that's a pretty healthy number. If if n is prime, that's
wait. This can.
Yeah. Okay. So. A typical n is if you're considering p, then the n is p minus 1. So this is something like maybe 5 p minus 1 over p minus 1, which could be whatever, I don't know. But it's not too small. So the next example. There are a whole bunch of examples on page 68 near the top where I use the command integers of a number to create the integer ring mod n in Sage. Then you just give, if you say, for example, integers of 25.unitgens, it just performs this procedure and gives you back these numbers that are canonically defined as I've defined them today. And for example, for 2005, you can see that my notes are way out of date. I should have put 2006 in. Generators are 402 and 1206. So if you factor 2005, I don't know how it factors, but that one should be easy. Yeah, 405 times 5. So one factor, you have a generator which is 402. When you, it's something that's, I guess, 2 modulo 5 and 1 modulo 400. Yeah, and I mean, what, 401, sorry. And then, yeah. So in any case, you now know how to describe Dirichlet characters to a computer. You know how to describe them to each other in general. I mean, if you look in the literature, the Dirichlet characters you see people describe are, not in the literature for modular forms, but just in math generally, they're usually Dirichlet quadratic characters. And then you describe them by saying it's the Legendre symbol, maybe something like this, or something like that. But With modular forms, you have to describe Dirichlet characters often, especially when you do population, and the characters have bigger order. And basically, the only place I've really ever seen a notation explained besides stuff I come up with myself is in the Perry handbook, where they have a pretty bad choice in there. And I guess group representation people would also consider all this sort of thing, but they have their own language. Okay, so I propose, though, that a way to describe Dirichlet characters to each other is to just give a list of numbers that are, as I've explained. Okay, so I've probably now told you about 6 times what a list of numbers means in describing a Dirichlet character. So just as a quick test, knowing nothing else, let's just say I said a Dirichlet character was given by this, where I is square root of minus 1. Could you tell me the order of the Dirichlet character as an element of the group of all Dirichlet characters, mod n, without even knowing n or anything else? 4, you're right, it's 4, because this defines, it corresponds to a surjective homomorphism from something to a cyclic group of order 4. So the character itself, the smallest power of it that would be trivial would be the fourth power. So in general, the order of the character is the least common multiple of the orders of each of the entries here. All right, so the next issue that comes up is how do you efficiently evaluate Dirichlet characters? And see what I can say. So in general, you essentially, well, you run into the discrete log problem. So let's say you want to evaluate one of these homomorphisms. Depending on how you've represented it, you may or may not run into the discrete log problem, but given the representation I described today, you certainly run into the discrete log problem. So you have an element A here, and you want to figure out what it maps to over here. Say epsilon of A. And how do you do that? Well, you have to write A in terms of generators for this group, given the representation I described. And then, you know, you have a power of one generator times a power of another, and so on. You take the powers of the corresponding elements in this list, and then you multiply those all together, and that gives you the image of A. But you still have to write A in terms of generators for this group. So now, for the next few minutes, I'm just talking about a completely standard basic question in elementary number theory / group theory. How do you write an integer in terms of a fixed collection of generators for Z mod and Z star? Well, that's certainly a sensible question to ask, and that's something that comes up with this representation. By the way, you could choose a different representation for which that would be trivial. For example, list every single value of the character systematically. It takes a lot of memory, a long time, but if you did that, then you can immediately compute the value without using the discrete log, without having to solve the discrete log problem. But of course, that would be a good idea if n were very small, a horrible idea if n were huge. Wouldn't work. Also, if your character happens to be quadratic and you can write it in this form, you can use quadratic reciprocity or more general reciprocity laws, I guess it's just quadratic reciprocity basically. But where the numerator and denominator may not be prime, so maybe it's called Jacobi reciprocity. But you can use that to sort of flip things back and forth and avoid ever having to factor anything, which helps a lot. In any case, let me sort of explain what the issue is here. So just for simplicity for a moment, suppose you have a Dirichlet character mod P, and you fixed, you view this as the group generated by G, where just to make things the same as what I've been describing so far, you choose your G to be the smallest element of Z mod PZ star that generates multiplicatively, or smallest means the first one, we try 2, 3, and so on. So now you have an element A in here, and you want to find its image over here, and
since this homomorphism is described by seeing what G does too, we just have to figure out what power of G is equal to A. So G, so the discrete log problem actually asks, what is that power? Discrete log problem is given G and A find an N such that G to the power of N is equal to A. And we're doing this in Z mod PZ star, so this is, in fact, exactly the same discrete log problem as comes up in the Diffie-Hellman key exchange, which is the first ever published public key crypto system. So we find G and A, find it. So this problem, there's there's a naive algorithm, which is you run through all the powers of G until you find one that's equal to A, and then you're done. And the complexity of that is, well, memory-wise, it doesn't take any memory, really. You just have to store, just store the power of G as you go. But it doesn't sort of, no memory gets used up, really. A very, very minimal amount of memory. No noticeable memory is used. The problem is it takes about P, big O of P operations, the constant times P operations. So that's not a good way to go. There's another algorithm called the baby step giant step algorithm.
Which actually gets used, it's like one of the basic tools in computational number theory, which gets used constantly. In fact, I went to an algorithmic number theory conference once, and I heard people talking left and right about using this baby step giant step algorithm, that baby step giant step algorithm. And by the end of the conference, I still had no clue what the baby step giant step algorithm was. So it was really very high. I've heard it said that many times, and still I just couldn't figure out what the heck they were talking about. I think I can tell you at least, I'll tell you in 1 minute what it is. If I fail, then I'll tell you again on Monday. But the idea is really, really simple. You take your G, and, well, fix an N that's roughly square root of, I think you make it maybe the ceiling of the square root of P minus 1. Ah! That says 1 minute.
Not fair. Well, it's over.
Well, I'll show you something, 30 seconds. So you take g to the m, g to the m squared, all the way up to g to the m to the some big power. Actually, I don't want to explain too quickly. So just to leave you in suspense,
I'll tell you what the baby step giant step algorithm is at the beginning of class on Monday.
So I'll see you all on Monday. And a reminder, Chuck is going to talk about elliptic modular surfaces on Friday. So just because I won't be here doesn't mean you shouldn't be here. In fact, I'm jealous that you'll get to be here. So, I'm going to Berkeley, by the way, and also San Francisco.